Hosting for this podcast is made possible through mtgcast.com, which is supported by a generous contribution from quietspeculation.com, Magic's premier trading and financial news site.
Hello and welcome to our fourth episode of At Your End Step. This is going to be a special episode because we do have a special guest. And so I'll kind of go straight into the introduction of our special guest. Of course, I'm Morgan and I'm joined here with Jordan and Mike. But we actually have a special guest going by the name of Dave Nolan. And he is a someone that is synonymous as far as that's concerned here in the Midwest area as far as in the Northeast. And, I'll kind of let Dave take over here and kind of give him a quick introduction about his history with Magic and what he is up to these days.
All right. Hey, guys. How's it going?
Great.
You already know who I am? Do I need to go through this? No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, okay. All right.
Easy pro points.
Easy bark.
Big three, eh?
I just had to run that out there after last week's episode. My name's Dave. I'm originally from the Northeast Boston area. I moved out to Columbus in 2009. And pretty much... I didn't really know anybody out here, so kind of met mostly everybody I know through Magic. So I'm kind of the elder statesman, I guess, of the group that we have out here. I've been playing for about 16 years. So
God, you're old.
Yeah, I know. Well, you guys never reminded me of that. So.
Jordan!
I've played Magic literally half my life. Which I think a lot of people are getting to that point now, but
that's very true.
It's crazy.
Yeah. But I used to play very competitively. I've played on the Pro Tour 2 times. I've won 2 separate state championships, but I definitely would consider myself a has-been at this point. I have a family. I'm married. I have a child. So. Don't get to play as often as I would like. So usually it's just, at this point, once a week. I love the cube, so that's pretty much where I put most of my energy. But, I still like to hit up the big events as they come around. I went to the Star City Games Open in Columbus a couple weeks ago. So, I like to hit those up when I can.
Yeah, most certainly. And you definitely do. I wouldn't say that you're has been. I mean, you definitely are still a competent player. And you money the Star City Games Open, and it's definitely something that, as far as that's concerned, you definitely are someone that has a lot of experience and a lot of us turn to during our testing, as far as that goes. You being the progenitor of one of the main cube groups that's local here, definitely are something that motivates a lot of the players and gets them together to play Magic and get better. So, has been, I think that's a little rough, but yeah. I appreciate your modesty.
Don't hate yourself. This guy 8-2 in SCG Open with 0 testing was just like whatever.
Yeah,
like don't hate yourself.
Yeah, I tested like 3 games.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, clearly you're clearly. Has been washed up totally.
Well, that's a product of just not being able to play as much as I used to, at least. So
of course.
I do it again.
More like the Yoda of the group, right?
Right, exactly.
I help where I can.
So Dave's saying if you want to
Oh, no, so the Jesus of the group.
Okay. Dave's saying that if he had a week to play test, he would have won the damn thing. I think that's what, I think that's what I heard. I
said that, but,
so as we had to answer this question when we started this podcast, so does Dave. So Dave Nolan, out of these 3 players, Tom Martell, Brian Kibler, and LSV, who would you fuck? Who would you marry? Who would you kill?
Oh man. Well, I can't kill LSV.
No.
Because he's just funny. I don't think I want to fuck LSV, but I think I could be married to LSV.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think
you know, if we were in it for the long haul, I think we could get through it.
I mean, fair enough.
And Kibler, man, I don't know. Like, the only person I think in the community that stacked up to Kibler is maybe Swedish Kibler.
That's true.
Mr. Larson is also quite attractive.
I think I'd have to go with Buck Kibler, Kill Martell. I don't have anything against Martell, but I don't know. I guess he's not as prominent in the community as the other two. So just based on that, I guess that's what I would go with.
That's true.
Everybody trying to kill my husband. I don't know what to tell you.
I'm sorry, we just haven't met him. But you said
I just don't know him that well, you know? Maybe. Yeah.
I mean, it's nothing against him. I mean, I fully believe when you said that he has soft hands, so.
I shook his hand, and I swear to God, it was like looking into the multiverse. Alright, it was just.
It's genius. Alright, so. Glad to have someone else, and, no, we hope to do these guest spots more often as we start to build up steam behind the podcast. But you know, we definitely like to have another set of eyes on the things that we talk about, especially moving into a very heavy PTQ season that we are going to be trying to attend as many as possible. So let's go ahead and move on to this week's bigger tournaments. So there were a couple that happened that, you know, significantly impacted us. One of those being the Star City Games Philly Open. Now that I thought was a pretty interesting open, mainly because the douchebag that won it, going by Robert Theater. If you've looked at this gentleman's pictures that they post on like Facebook, he is on his phone constantly, and like he does it on purpose, but it is a dick move.
He doesn't even look at the camera. He's just like, I'm supposed to be here, so. Yeah.
He needs a haircut. That's what he needs.
Both in the group photo.
Easy dad.
Both the group photo, as well as his individual photo, he's looking at his phone. And that's rude. That's rude. That's putting a bad name on Magic, and I don't appreciate that as a Magic player.
There are a number of awesome comments on that picture, actually.
Like, I imagine there are. Because we are
asking how long it took him to decide. Oh, of course we are. We trash everybody.
Exactly.
As a community, though. It's a group effort.
Maybe the reason why he was doing that was to stand out, though, and now we're talking about him on the podcast, so.
Oh, he did it.
Okay. Oh, yeah, he did it. He broke the fucking format. He's still a douchebag, and I still don't like
him. Troll.
Anyway, but he was piloting an Esper control list, everybody. That's still a deck. Holy crap, and there's actually.
I think it's a deck in this format.
Yeah, it's true. There's actually two Esper control lists in the top eight. His list is definitely, you know, kind of reminiscent of the Super Friends lists. You know, has five main deck planeswalkers. He's got a sixth one in the side. And, you know, definitely looks like something that could start to reemerge in your local FNMs and your PTQ area, you know, PTQs in your area, as far as that's concerned. So definitely take a look at it. I think, it's something that could, you know, sort of take off here in the near future. Especially since he actually beat, a reanimator list, you know, a straight junk reanimator list in the second, in his last match, and you know, that's definitely something that's very prominent that I have, you know, much familiarity with, as you all know. So, you know, definitely something to keep your eyes on. Now, did the other list that I saw here that I'm sure everyone else probably did was the good old Rock list. Did you guys have a chance to take a look at this this list here?
That's a list that's going around for a little while. One of the guys in our group was testing it. It's interesting.
Yeah, most certainly.
You played it against it at the PTQ, didn't you, Morgan?
Yeah, and I punted against it. This one is a little different, because the one I played against at the PTQ had was a little bit more aggressive. It had Stranglergeists, and it also had
Rogue's Passage. Your opponent had Rogue's Passage.
Yeah,
I did
the
lose.
Was a little worse.
We also had the 3-3 Haster.
Dragmangler.
Dragmangler, that's correct. This one is definitely more of a traditional rock list. It's straight green-black, very control-y, has elements that's very board control, and that's why I classify it as you know, sort of a rock list. Very mid-rangey, very interesting. You know, it's just good to see different decks show up in top 8 and top 16 at these big events. So, yeah, just something I wanted to bring up.
How about the Crypt Incursions in the board of that deck? I mean, that card seems super spicy.
That was, oh my, blowout for the guy playing the Rites that he played in top 8. Like, just, oh, I'm going to go for it. Oh, no, you're not, JK. Like, what?
Yeah, not only will you not go for it, I'm going to gain X amount of life, too.
Right, yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, he also has two cremates main deck as well, which is interesting.
I mean, that's the same idea as playing, like, Ground Seal, I guess. I guess you get a little more gotcha factor in the main, but...
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't understand why those just are Ground Seals, now that I really think about it, but... I guess since he is predominantly black, he just probably can't cast them consistently on turn two when you might need them.
That's fair.
Yeah, that's fair. I have to comment. I was looking at the pictures for this, since I'm on Facebook now, of this guy at the top eight in Star City, the long-haired standard winner.
Yeah.
One of the comments while he's looking at his phone goes, searching online for a better hair straightener. I thought that was the best. Good job, Julian Voldaren. You're, did I just get trolled by somebody's name? Oh, God. There's no way his last name's Voldaren. Like, sister's name's Olivia. Ha, gotcha.
Oh, man.
But yeah, that's about it. There is a four-color reanimator list and a junk reanimator list in the top eight, so those are still things. In the four-color reanimator list, there definitely is a Boros Battle Shaper in it.
What is that?
That is the 5/5 for 7. That at the beginning of each combat, up to one target creature attacks or blocks this combat, if able, and up to one target creature can't attack or block this combat.
So here, Dave, that's what you played at the Columbus Open, this four-color reanimator. What do you think of that?
I'm not sure about that guy. I mean, I haven't played with that card at all, in limited or constructed.
No one has.
Yeah, no, zero people.
I'm looking at it now. I'm not sure... I mean, I suppose that, I mean, if it doesn't get killed, it can just dominate the board, but it seems cute. I don't know if it's necessary.
Yeah, you think you would, I think I would just rather have the Olivia, the standard in those lists there, instead of that. I mean, you can cast Olivia. It definitely can impact the board just as much as the Battle Shaper can. It's an interesting choice, most certainly, but it I think people are just, with these reanimator lists, being like, what's a cool 7 drop that I can try? Oh, this one? Okay, let's throw that in there.
I don't know.
I like the idea of like running things like your Fragtusk must attack. Oh, I'll block with my Boros Reckoner. Get him.
Yes, if we could all live the dream.
Like, it's a bomb and draft.
Yeah, like I've drafted this set like a few times. You think I would have at least like heard of it before? I'm just like, what? This Minotaur with a hat on and he's mad. And like,
I want someone just to animate what Jordan just described. A Minotaur with a hat on and angry. I want to see that. Someone draw that for us if we have any comments. Listeners.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there might be a use for this card that I'm just not thinking of. Like maybe there's some interaction, but I don't
know. I mean, it's nice to have a semi, you know, one creature falter every turn, possibly. I mean, that's right. Kind of nice. Just to get stuff through. I mean, I'm sure when it worked, it was insane. I'm sure.
Yeah, like, the thing I would think is, okay, put this in against aggro, right? Okay, only that dude can attack and only my dude can block. But, like, you're not going to get the 7 mana against aggro. I guess you unbury him on turn 4, but, like, even then...
Aegis Renegade is just better, right?
Right.
I mean, I guess you're already playing all 4, so you can't have any more, but...
That's true. There are no more angels.
Like, 1/5/5 against an aggro deck doesn't seem that great, especially, like... Volcanic strength is a thing.
I mean, I honestly think I don't even think it's for aggro decks in all honesty. I really think it's something that's a mid-range sort of board control thing.
It's probably a mirror breaker. I mean, like, you want to smash angels and you want to make sure they just bounce off each other. I mean, getting to control combat's pretty interesting, but.
Yeah, 100%. I don't
know. Maybe it's not die again. Under Mahal
Knight?
I don't know.
That's true.
Well, hold on, Thundermaw. Stop right there.
No. But he also has Gisela Blade of Gold Knight in the sideboard, which is spicy.
Which list was this? Was this the third place list?
This is the third place reanimator list.
Okay. I just don't...
I'd almost rather have that than the Battle Shaper main deck.
I kind of want to watch his matches now and see if they even get played. I can't help but think that's the one card in his deck that he drew, and he was kind of like... Eh, we'll make it work, you know?
Oh, maybe he was just trolling everyone. Like, maybe the point was to put it in the yard and then have the opponent stare at it, like, wait, what? And just, like, the rest of the game, just throw them off because they don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, maybe he even played it in a different language, so they had to get an oracle reading every time. You're welcome, Mike.
Yeah. Buy American.
But yeah, that pretty much rounds out the open. I mean, we see, you know, our regular characters of Naya Midrange and Red Green Aggro still showing up. Top 16 has more of the same, really. Yeah.
I mean,
that's standard.
I mean, having Esper show up twice in the top 8, I mean, Planeswalkers are good, unless they're getting, you know, unless you're getting attacked by Rakdos Kecklers.
Sure.
But, I don't know what to make of the standard format. I mean, Dave, you go way back. Has there been a format this open that you can remember?
Yeah, I mean, there have been formats, but, I don't know, off the top of my head, I don't know, there's always kind of been that one dominant deck, you know, whether it be fairies or Jund when Charge Pilar was in standard, or Cobblade. Going back further than that, you probably have to go back pretty far.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I mean,
it's better for the game, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, I would think so, but I mean, granted, there's a lot of decks that are doing very similar things, so I mean,
that's true.
I'm ready for you know, M14, I'm ready for new cards, but I mean, I guess that's just the standard player in me. It's just like,
right, exactly.
Like, okay, give me something new.
Right.
Attention span of a 5-year-old.
Yeah, I mean, right. Clearly.
Can you imagine Legacy, if we were, like, dedicated Legacy players, like, well, I've been playing Show and Tell for 4 years.
Yeah, but I mean, like, the difference is that you immediately buy into Legacy and you spend so much money that you see that invested immediately. And, like, you have, like, heart and soul invested into that deck. And, like, you stick with it. And with Standard, you invest over time and you don't necessarily see it over, you know, up front as far as that's concerned most of the time. So I think that's the difference. Like, we get bored with our cards quicker just because there's new ones coming out constantly and we don't always see a massive amount of investment we put into them right away. Unless you're, like, buying into Standard, which doesn't happen that often that much, I would say. Maybe Jordan, maybe you probably spend a lot of money buying into Standard, probably.
I do. I spend, when a new set drops, I definitely feel it, especially when I was in college. I definitely, people live paycheck to paycheck, quote unquote. I lived pre-release to pre-release. I'd get a lot of money in the middle of a set and go to tournaments and feel good, and then, like, pre-release would come and I'd be like, oh, I have $3 in my checking account, that's sweet. But, it's getting better, but, like, as you said, like this set will be easier than the last one. This
right.
rotation will be more manageable. There's not shock lands to the buy. Good
yeah.
Jesus, that's terrible on a kid on a budget, you know?
That's true.
So, yeah, I definitely hear what you're saying. The barrier to entry is easier to slide into as opposed
yeah.
to Legacy, where you pretty much just got to drop a grand.
Exactly. Because, like, you could draft an active set. Like, you could draft, you know, Dragon's Maze, Return of Ravnica, and Guild, Gatecrash right now. And still get cards from that, and still get trade from that. So you have cards to trade to get cards that you need. So that's how a lot of people will kind of break into Standard in the first place, is they just draft a whole bunch, and then after that, they, you know, just buy cards and what have you, and then, you know, move their cards before rotation happens, which I should do, but I, you know. But, so, we'll kind of move on here, and we'll kind of look at our PTQ that team at your end step went to. Minus Dave, of course, because he's new.
Right.
But we went, we had fun, we had a good time, and you know, we kind of just wanted to share our stories about that as far as that's concerned. So let's go ahead and we will start with Jordan as far as that's concerned. So Jordan, tell us about your PTQ experience. It was up in the Canton area, so it was Canton, Ohio, so about 2 hours away from us, which is not bad at all. We all still woke up at the butt crack of dawn and drove to Mike's house, and that was fun times. That was a good time. It was. We actually had a great car.
We had a great
We had a great overall time as far as that's concerned. But Jordan specifically, we'll go with what's going on with you.
Sure. Yeah. The term, I believe, according to Morgan, is screw the pooch.
Yes, that is correct. You used it. You used it correctly. I'm proud of you. You're
yeah,
learning.
Yeah, that's what I did. For those of you that are as unfamiliar with the term as I am, pretty much did terribly. I didn't play bad, I don't think. I played Jund, and round one I played another Jund opponent, and that matchup is pretty much who draws the cards, it felt like. When neither opponent really misplay, it's who draws the Rakdos for turn or whatever, or the Sire Insanity first. And that's what happened. I just blew him out with Rakdos Return and Thragtusk, and that's okay. Round two, played Junk Reanimator, and that was a beating. He 2-0'd me, not close. And that matchup's just horrible for me. Then I proceeded to play Junk Reanimator in the next two rounds and lost both. So the old 1-3 dropper felt really good. Spend $25 and a whole day to do terrible. But when you play two coin flips and two bad matchups, I guess sometimes you get the bad beats. Yeah, I guess it's frustrating because there's those moments where you go, man, where did I play bad that I could have done better? And I don't have any distinctive moments for me to look back to. Because there was even a moment in one of my matchups, Morgan, where you came up and you're like, hey, you did that really well. You just kind of died. And I was like, well, that sucks, right? Like, that doesn't happen to a good chess player. So
yeah, but I mean, like, that's why we play the game, right?
Right, right. We talk about that almost every episode. I feel like I say that every week. Like, it just happens, you know, and that's
very... Just want to make sure everyone knows that you don't play chess. Like, hey, guys, I may be a geek. I don't play chess, though.
Yeah,
I don't play chess.
Wait, you need genuine skill to play this game? There's no bonfires? Wait? Oh, I can't play that. I can't play that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and that's how I felt. That was kind of a bummer, but otherwise...
Like, bonfire?
Oh, you got there.
You're so funny.
I did it.
I just kind of want to add something off of what Jordan was saying there. With this standard format, it definitely feels like there a lot of the matchups are just matchup dependent. Like, it doesn't really matter what you have specifically. It's like you just have to hit your good matchups if you want to do well.
Yeah.
Definitely more now than it has been in the past.
Well, let me ask you a question then, Dave. In the past, what, like, so when Cobblade was the deck, right?
Right.
And so there obviously, like, there had to be a counter deck to Cobblade. It might not have beat anything else, but it beat Cobblade, right?
Yeah, it's called other Cobblade decks.
Oh, okay. So, like, okay, so I guess scratch that example, maybe, like, was there ever another, I mean, I can't help but think, like, in every format, there's a time where you're just like, well, I just have to dodge this matchup because this matchup sucks. Like, was that not true? And, like, that's, like, because that sounds bizarre to me. Like, you would just think from a mathematical standpoint, like, or from just, like, a game design standpoint, like, oh, these cards have to die to something.
Well, I feel like Magic, or just the way that Wizards is going with the game, and with just the cards that they've been printing the last couple of years, just seems like it's definitely going into just what we call Battlecruiser Magic, where it's just, you know, I play my bomb, and then hopefully you don't draw your bonfire, and it's kind of how it goes. I feel like in past formats, you kind of had a little bit more leeway. There was more play to the matchups. So,
okay.
So if the matchups were, I don't know, like, they weren't as deck-dependent as they are now, like, I feel anyway.
Okay, no, that's, I mean, like, I hear that from a lot of older players, too, like, or more experienced players. And that's interesting for me to hear as a guy who's been playing for about a year, is like, oh, wait, like, it didn't just used to be rock, paper, scissors. Because whenever I sit down at a table now, I'm just like, oh, well, I hope this guy's not Junk Reanimator. And, like, if it's Junk Reanimator, I'm like, oh, well, I probably lose. Let's just get mentally prepared to lose in 30 turns. Or, oh, look, like, another mid-range deck. LOL, I win. So,
yeah, well, I mean, there was still definitely, you know, rock, paper, scissors formats and things like that. But the cards weren't as impactful. It wasn't like, oh, I play an Angel of Serenity, and that's just going to take over the game. You know, the games were more of a gradual back and forth rather than I play my bomb and now I'm winning and then you play your bomb and now you're winning.
Okay.
That's kind of what I'm going for.
Okay, now that makes sense. I mean, I guess we see a little bit of that in Modern Masters Limited to an extent. Mm-hmm. Was there more, you actually play the game more as opposed to play, you know, like throw your cards on the table and hope you win. So yeah, I mean that makes sense. I kind of hope we go back to the times you're referencing. Like, I doubt it, right? But that'd be cool to actually play Magic, I guess.
The problem is, like, and I, like, granted, like, I played, like, a lot, like, fairly competitively right before, like, I had quit in Kamigawa. And, like, after they fixed Affinity, like, after they neutered it, so that wasn't, like, the only thing you could play, like, it felt like the format was all about, like, little interactions, like, Eternal Witness is huge, and it was just, like, how can you build incremental advantages? And then that's how, of course, like, Fairies was, right? And Cobblade was, and, you know, and even, like, Delver was, like, tempo plays. And that's why, like, a lot of people say they like those. Like, those mirror matches are really skill-intensive. But the problem is, like, those become the best decks. So it's like, you know, does Wizards want that anymore? And if they don't, which you know, Dave is suggesting, then it'll just keep being, you know, four fours for two at the next point. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely interesting to figure out. We'll have to see, I guess. But that was my PTQ weekend. Let's go into Morgan, because there was mine.
Aww, he's not so sad.
I got enough Planeswalker points to get a bye for Miami that I'm not going to go to now, so there's that.
Oh, yeah.
Thumbs up.
Oh, yeah.
Boom, baby.
So worth it. So, I mean, my PTQ experience was pretty good. I was pretty happy with the results that I got as far as that goes. My matchups were fairly good from the matches that I played. Played a lot of friends. Didn't really enjoy that. So that was pretty unfortunate. Round two, I played against one of the used to be local players. Goes by the name of Evan. Played against him, and it was a Reanimator mirror match, which I decidedly took. My first loss came to a Bant Splash Black Fog Tameo deck, where game one he got the emblem and had fog, so I just couldn't win at that point in time. And then I got game two, and then game three he just had the nuts, and I mulled, you know, did not draw very well. So that was unfortunate. My second loss came fairly late into the PTQ. What was it? Round before last, so round seven? Right, Mike?
Yeah, round seven.
Yeah, and I played against none other than Mike Kenny that we have here. And he walloped me pretty good. As per what our playtesting had already established, so I kind of knew what I was getting into, as far as that's concerned. And then my third loss came in the last round, actually. There was a slight bet also on our match that I'm being reminded of, which Jordan lost.
Yeah, to Rich, right? Like, I just wanted a piece of cake. Okay, yeah, but Morgan, you win, I get a piece of cake. Rich goes home $5 less in his pocket. No. What happened?
Yeah.
Morgan loses.
But go fuck yourself, because you wanted to bet against me anyway. So
because it was matchup dependent. I'm sorry, I love you both. But your guy would have taken Mike, because his deck beat yours.
I mean, proof's in the pudding, or the cake, so to speak.
Yeah, whatever. Whatever.
I still bought myself a piece of cake, because you had to spend $X. Well, that too.
And then my last round came to a black green mid range deck like we brought up earlier. Game three, you know, looking back on it, discussing it with the other at your end step guys, definitely could have taken it. Definitely had more of a chance to take it, I should say, rather than being, you know, overly confident about it. But there definitely were opportunities that I had that I didn't take advantage of because I wasn't paying attention to the game and the board state, and I wasn't evaluating the worth of my cards correctly. And how I had a Blood Baron of his Cope in my hand, and he has no answer for that in his deck, but I didn't value it as highly as I should have. So I wasn't able to read what I should have done based on the board state, the deck that I was playing correctly, and it cost me the game in the end, in a tenuous game three. So definitely some food for thought.
We talked about that too. Like, it was round eight, game three, and you got mulligan multiple times, like land screw. Like, that's a hard one mentally to even want to win. You're just like, yep, okay, last round. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
I mean, it's hard to stay, you know, diligent at that point.
Right. Yeah, but I mean, it's definitely something that, you know, makes or breaks me. I don't know if it really would have affected the price payout that I got. I don't think Mike already had better breakers than me, and I don't think that it would have necessarily, you know, pushed me any higher than what I got. But X3 still got paid out, you know, at least made my money back with the cards that I got. But it was a fun, exciting time. I wouldn't have traded for the world. And then we got sweet food afterwards, and I'll let Mike talk about that.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I lost my win in it. I don't know what else to. Oh. I play 9 mid range again. It, kind of ironically, we discussed some sideboard pieces before the tournament started. Mm-hmm. And Morgan was all like, "Yeah, I'll play that Blastos Act," and I was like, "Sure, let's do that." And then Morgan and I got paired in round seven. I blew out 5 mana guys with Blastos Act.
Oh yeah, I got talked by that. That's right.
I was like, "Oh hey buddy, this is a good call." So,
yeah.
It was a pretty good day. It was kind of frustrating because we got a weird like repair after in the sixth round, and I got paired against. I know a lot of people from that the Canton area, which we were, and I got paired against someone I knew playing Van Hexproof. Which going back to what you said, Dave, like you know how there's just some like well, like oh well, okay, this is a deck I can't beat, and I didn't, so lost that, and then had the Dream Crush Morgan, and I played another guy I knew for top eight, and he's playing red green aggro. He won the die roll and literally like won the game based on him going first. Like that's how the game went down. And then nutted all over my face game two. Like there was no chance. So it was pretty frustrating. I was pretty angry to be looking at top eight, and then like literally him and I had like really bad breakers, even though we both started out XO. And like everyone else in the top eight could draw except for us. It was one of those like clandestine moments where you're just like, you know, staring at the knife a little too long.
Yeah, I definitely felt like after you lost, I stood up to go watch Morgan play, and then I looked back over at you, and the dejected look on your face was so sad. Like, oh, it hurt to watch. And then, you know, the guy's friends weren't being the coolest people. So, but yeah, so like we all had pretty good weekends, I think. It was definitely a great time. Like, Morgan and I got to try out a new food place. What'd you think? We tried this drive-in, like, burger joint that Mike showed us. It was okay.
Yeah. Yeah, Swenson's. Oh, my gosh. I want to go back there.
Stinson's, yeah.
It's Swenson's.
Swenson's, sorry. Yeah, Swenson's.
Yeah, it was amazing. Anyone in the Kent area local to that, I do suggest it. It is amazing. As far as that's concerned. So, you know, it's definitely something that, you know, was important that we all, you know, kind of got together and, you know, had a really strong, you know, group of people there to, be at that PTQ and have a really strong Columbus presence because it made us feel more powerful, I think, by having a lot of people that we knew there and a lot of people that we could talk to about how their days were going and, you know, what they were seeing and what they were doing, as far as that goes. So.
Yeah, that, the PTQ is huge, right? Like 169? Isn't that kind of big?
It's pretty big. I mean, it's, obviously there was one in Toronto that was humongous. It was nearly double that size, if not double that size. So, not the biggest ever, but I mean, definitely sizable, not small.
Yeah, so, Dave, what's been new and good with you in terms of, standard magic? What's up, man? Cube?
I plan on going to the PTQ this weekend.
Sick.
So, sick. I'll be running, pretty much the same deck I play at the Star City of Columbus, which is a 4-color reanimator. Probably gonna make a few tweaks to it, but, I mean, I like the deck a lot. I thought that, you know, I had two losses that I felt, you know, could have went either way, so I'm just gonna stick with that since I haven't really tested anything else.
Yeah. Gonna get that, Boros Battle Shaper in there, huh? Yeah? Yeah?
from that one, but, you know, it's definitely an interesting card. You know, if I had more time to play with it, maybe I would try it out, but, I think I'm just gonna stick with my guns.
As a 4-color reanimator player, I saw a guy playing, cause you play red, white, green, black, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I saw another guy playing it with blue. I played against a dude at SCG Open Columbus who was playing it with blue, and I thought that was so interesting. Like, what do you think about the blue option? Is it just not as good in your opinion, or like?
So they run like Forbidden Alchemy.
Yeah, Forbidden Alchemy, and then there's that card where he looks through the top five, picks a creature.
Charges Instincts.
Yeah, yeah, and then you can flash it back. It felt very much like a 4-color flashback deck.
Yeah, I think it really depends on how deep you want to go on the graveyard strategy. I think the version running was a little bit different than the one that Top 8 at the Star City opened this past weekend. Because his kind of more relied on the reanimator, I guess, angle of it. The version that I was running was like 4 Farseeks and Masters. I actually saw a deck list online and I tweaked it a little bit. But yeah, I mean, most of the time it just plays out as just a mid-range deck. It's almost like a Jund deck with Angel Serenity. But you also have this powerful reanimation pack that, you know, you can just win. So, I don't know, I prefer to go that way with it, because that way you don't just lose to random graveyard hate.
Sure.
I mean, it's definitely an interesting way to go.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a good point, with all the main deck ground seals, with the main deck cremates and the rock lists. That's a good plan. Like, I wouldn't be surprised, honestly, if we saw a lot of The Rock this weekend, because it's cheap. It did really well. And the cheap thing is honestly a big thing for a lot of people.
Doesn't that Liliana Veil, though? I mean,
I think it did, but like, if there's any card that's cuttable, that would be, you know what
it's
I mean?
It's fair, like, I suppose. It's fair.
Yeah, we're actually, well, it runs three, so. But I mean, I still think if there's any card that's cuttable, it's definitely Lily. You could definitely just like take the three Lilianas out and put three more Putrefies in, because that's what they're there for anyway.
Right.
So, yeah, so that's cool. GP Vegas, are we good to move on to that?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's important. So, obviously, it was the largest TCG event, if I'm not mistaken, was held over the weekend, GP Vegas. It was all Modern Masters, sealed and draft. And, you know, it was massive. I mean, there were people that were waiting in lines that were there for hours. It was as if they had been transported to Disney World, or a small country, as far as that goes. So, yeah, it was GP small town, and it was won by a ginger. No, I'm just kidding. It was won by a ginger. Neil Oliver, sort of an unknown. I mean, the only real person in the top eight that I know of offhand is Dusty Ochoa, just because he recently placed, you know, is in the top eight of the Pro Tour. So that's the only name I know offhand, and he was actually defeated by the GP winner. But man, can you imagine winning the world's, you know, largest TCG event? I mean, that's crazy. That would be huge. I can't even you know, consider that as far as that's concerned. But
I'd get a T-shirt. I mean, that's what I would do.
Oh, you would say like won the world's largest GP,
of course,
and all I got
yes.
was this stinky T-shirt as well as a trophy and thousands of dollars.
Like, you know how people put their pins on their playmat? If I ever win a trophy in an event ever, I'm seriously going to put my trophy in my bag and put it on my playmat. Like my opponent's setting up his stuff. He looks sweet with his SCGI keys. And I'm like, hold on a second, sir. As I rummage through my luggage and I just put this SCG champion on Matt. And I'm like, you can be on the play. You're going to need it.
Wow. Wow.
And then immediately get shit on.
Yeah, right.
You actually like, dream douchebag dreams.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. What's that, Dave?
Did you hear about how he started? So this guy had zero buys, and he lost round one.
He lost round one?
One out.
Zero buys.
Oh my god.
What?
Jesus. So, like, this was destiny. This was, like, preordained. It was, like, the Lord came down and spoke to him, being like, Neil, you were going to win this GP.
Is this the God from Book of Mormon?
Yeah, clearly.
Yeah, I hope he hit the casino after he was done.
Oh, so.
Yeah, no shit.
Yeah, for real. Like, that blows my mind, first off. And then, like, the thing, like, so 4,500 players is double GP Charlotte. And I was there, and I thought there's no way I could imagine myself in a room, a bigger room than this for Magic. Like, I remember feeling so small at Charlotte, I can't even imagine what it would be like to be in Vegas. You know, like, 4,500 people playing a card game is insane.
Well, they said they could have seated 6,000. Like, I don't even...
Yeah, that's interesting to me. They had the product, and this is one of the things we wanted to talk about, right? You have the product, the space, and the people for 6,000. Why cap it?
I mean, do you have the judges to?
Mm-hmm.
They said they had backup guys, right?
That I heard otherwise. I know. I think the A team was even talking about this. They said that they were having like an all call on Twitter for judges, and were afraid they weren't going to get enough.
Yeah, I think it was a staffing issue. I know that the TO kind of put a little message out there saying that, you know, he didn't feel comfortable having more than 4,500 people, just because it would affect basically how the tournament was run.
Right.
So whether you agree with that or not, I mean,
that's fair.
Respect that he did that means, you know, wants people to have a good time. I mean, that's why you go to these things.
Right. It's hard to turn down all that extra money, so that's cool.
You could subscribe to the conspiracy theory that Wizards doesn't want that much product out there for fear of price gouging.
No, I heard that theory as well, and it's like interesting, right? Like it's fringe, but at the same time, like the big thing to me was how late it happened. Like the cap, you know, because you have those guys that might have been fringe or were going to fly, had plans to fly out, register that day, whatever. Like, I feel like you shut a good number of people out by saying Tuesday, the week of the event, hey, by the way, there's 400 spots left. Go, 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 go.
Well, they were probably hoping to ride it out and hope that, like I would have bet if they would have thought that they only would have ended up with, like, 5,000, like, they would have been like, okay, we can do that. But I think, and like, I think the, oh gosh, one of the TOs had sent a message about, like, how a number of players, like, entered their DCI number wrong when they pre-registered. Okay?
Whoa.
And, like, so, like, they have to go through and figure out what that person's DCI number really is. And, like, they were calculating out man hours so that, like for example, if 300 people out of the, I think it was, like, 300 people out of the total, like, did that wrong, like, they pre-registered wrong, then it's, like, 14 man hours to fix it. So if you're like, they're trying to get that done this week and they're still adding new people, like, again, you go back to the staffing, like, is it even possible to get everyone registered correctly? Like, it's difficult to run an event like that. And oh, yeah, from what everyone said, I mean, they did a great job.
I mean, that's definitely good to hear. And, you know, kind of bodes well for future, endeavors as far as that's concerned with big events. So I definitely hope to see, you know, more large events and, you know, potentially larger events. It'll definitely be hard to attract that many people again for another kind of format, regardless of what it is, just due to the fact that Modern Masters is such a huge, you know, product that people want to open just for that chance of opening that one card that kind of makes their entire trip worth it. So,
it's the free candy effect, right? Like,
exactly.
Like, they're giving, it's essentially like they think they're getting value to play, and a lot of times you don't, like, if you're playing Constructed, you don't think you're getting value to play, obviously. So no, it's definitely hard to attract that many people.
Mm-hmm. No, 100%. So, I'm definitely glad to see, you know, that there were, you know, X amount of players in one room playing Magic. It definitely bodes well for the health of the game, and, you know, that there are people that just want to go out there and, you know, play some Magic. And that's what I want. You know, I want to keep investing in this game. And to make sure that it's strong and I'm not wasting my money, and that I can continue to play this and it can continue to be my hobby for, you know, foreseeable future.
Did anybody watch any coverage? I mean, I know Dave said he did. What was it like? Because GPs usually are less than stellar coverage compared to the Pro Tour. So
it's still rough because they won't commit. Like, it's frustrating because they won't commit to knowing everyone. Like, in the Pro Tour, they have the extra guys going around that you know the players' hands, and it just changes. It changes the way the commentary is, and it changes the way, like a lot of the key players keep their hands way off screen. And I don't know. It's frustrating to follow. Like, when they're taking a long time to make a decision, it actually gets really boring.
Mm-hmm. No, right? Like, because you have no, like, when I can see on the Pro Tour someone's hand, I can think through, okay, what would I be doing? Like, what? You
that's
know,
exactly it. You fill the time mentally.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's actually a very recent addition to.
It is. You're absolutely, yeah, it definitely is.
Yeah, Dragon, Gatecrash, right?
Yeah. I thought it was interesting. I mean, I really like the limited format. The sealed deck was a little bit different than draft from what I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
I think because in draft, you have all these archetypes that you can kind of go with. And with sealed, you're just kind of like, okay, well, here it is. Maybe you have an archetype.
Right, yeah.
You're playing the best cards, yeah.
Right.
You're probably just playing good stuff, that deck.
Right, but it was definitely interesting. I mean, for me especially, I mean, I love Cube, and this is pretty much the closest thing to a Cube GP that we're probably ever going to have. So,
good point.
I was definitely looking forward to watching the coverage, and I got to see a decent amount of it over the weekend.
That's good. Now, I mean, do you have any, you know, possible, because I only watched a little bit of it on Sunday. But any ideas on, like, I know that Star City Games just recently had a series of articles today and yesterday about ways that coverage could improve. I haven't got a chance to read both articles offhand, but yeah, I definitely think that coverage can go farther. It's definitely becoming more popular. You know, you have 4,500 people attending an event. You know, the coverage can be a little bit better. Now, based on your coverage watching, Dave, is there anything that kind of jumps out at you that could just improve coverage across the board, whether it be with Wizards or with Star City?
I think it'd be cool if they had more, like, special guest commentators. You know, Wizards of the Pro Tour, they've had LSV in the booth, you know, the last couple of Pro Tours, and that's been awesome because he's with Team Channel Fireball, and he's testing the format. He knows the format inside and out. He knows the players. He knows the decks. He just has a lot of insight into what's actually going on, where I feel like some of these other guys, you know, they might know the cards, but maybe they don't know the line to play or, you know, things like that. So I feel like, you know, if they have more pros kind of in the booth to give that inside information almost, it adds a lot.
Oh, yeah.
The only problem I see with that, though, is good luck getting LSV to do that when he can go play in the Pro Tour, you know? Like, if they were like, hey, Jordan, play in the Pro Tour or comment the Pro Tour, like, dude, bro, I'm playing, right? Like,
we'll pay you like you won the Pro Tour.
Well, yeah, I'm saying just, like, maybe in, like, the later rounds. You know,
You could, I mean, it doesn't have to be LSV.
Yeah, I'm not saying just LSV. Just any pro that basically, you know, maybe didn't make day two, they could have him on day two or in the top eight or something.
Sure. Because I know, like, LSV at the end of, I think it was Gatecrash that he did his first one. And at the end, he goes, they were like, hey, we'd be happy to have you back. And he goes, I'd be happy if I was never back. You know, like, in a joking fashion. But, like, yeah, that's a good point, right? Like, to him, he'd rather them be commenting on his finals match. And then again, like, I always like to compare it to pro sports, which might not be fair. But, like, you don't just randomly see a commentator hop in for a couple minutes just when, like, you know, like, I don't know. You don't see
commentators. It happens in baseball all the time.
I know you don't, like, not for play-by-play and...
Oh, man, an Indians fan, okay? But they, heck, this last weekend, they had Kevin Costner's in Cleveland, like, shooting a movie or something. They had him in for an inning just to, you know, BSing with him and calling balls and strikes, and the Indians do that a lot. I've heard, not on national broadcasts, not like Fox and stuff, but the local stuff, I hear that all the time. We just have someone come in and, you know, shoot the breeze and... You know, for an inning or two, that happens a lot.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you want to make the sports comparison, like, you constantly see this, whether it be ESPN or Fox or whatever. I mean, they get these guys that just retired. I mean, now you see Ray Lewis just retired from
right.
NFL. He's now on ESPN doing, you know, breaking down, you know, NFL. So, and I think, like, obviously he's going to have a lot more insight because he's just coming off playing last year. You know, he's going to know a lot more of what's going on right now, whereas... you know, maybe some of these other guys that haven't played or haven't played in a long time, maybe don't have as much to offer as far as how the game is right now.
It's kind of like inviting a former Pro Tour player onto your podcast. It's kind of...
guys, I wasn't ever on the Pro Tour. Stop it.
So. No, we know.
We weren't. It wasn't, oh. Oh, you thought, oh.
Oh, awkward. Oh, you meant Dave. That's weird.
Yeah.
Well, the one thing I will say, the one thing I don't really enjoy in the coverage, and this goes back to like the Pro Tours as well. But I saw them doing, they had the little snippets where like, you know, they're explaining the archetypes, and the cool thing they did is they went in and they said like the top five most picked commons on mode of the last few weeks, the top five most picked uncommons. But when they talk about the actual archetypes, like goblins, you play small efficient creatures, you attack the opponent in hordes. It's like no way.
That reminds me of this sick story that actually happened. Like, I was playing Giants at a Modern Masters draft, and it was just, like, I got beat because, like, I didn't win on turn 5 or whatever, and my opponent beat me in a really long game. And at the end of the match, he goes, hey, I want to let you know aggro decks are supposed to win early in the match. And I looked at him like, I don't like to think I'm directly rude to individuals, right? Like, I'm rude to you, like, about them to you guys, but, like, person to person, I like to think I'm nice. And I just looked at him and was like, well, if I didn't know that, I really wouldn't have drafted Red White Giants and be sitting across the table from you right now. And he was just like, what? I was like, never mind. And I signed him 0-2 and dropped because I was like tilted that someone would be like, aggro decks win fast. Oh, guys, aggressive means fast. Oh, gosh, I've been doing it wrong my whole life.
I don't know. Like, it just seems like they're catering that to the lowest common denominator, and I don't know if that's the player who's watching players draft Modern Masters.
Right, like, kitchen table kids aren't, they're not watching GPs or Pro Tours or whatever, like,
it's... But it also alienates, like, us, who are just like, no way! Fairies right. have lots of flyers? Shit.
I feel like that's been the knock on Rich Hagon a lot.
Yeah.
I feel like he oversimplifies a lot of things, but, I mean, if you look at it from a new player perspective, if somebody... You know, maybe has never seen a live event or something like that. You know, they're not going to know what's going on. So I'm actually okay with it. You know, it's just, it is what it is.
that's fair. I mean, I guess it's a necessary evil, but I don't know. I feel like they can do something a little bit. I feel like you have for the next 10 minutes, we're going to dumb this down. If this doesn't apply to you, come back later.
Well, they have, like, Day 9 in StarCraft scene, right, who, like, can communicate the game at a very proficient level, yet make it accessible to a newer player. And, I mean, I feel like we have to have somebody like that in Magic, right, who can communicate the mature thoughts of the game that the four of us that are more competitive listeners can understand, but then that somebody who just played his first FNM and is like, oh my gosh, there's pros at this game, like that he can understand too. There has to be either a duo that's good for that or a guy who's great at that.
Well, I think that's probably another conversation, because like, go back to what Dave said, like, yeah, like Rich Hagan is not exactly known for being great at building that bridge. But at the same time, they're not really looking to have professional commentators at this moment, which is probably something that would be a huge leap forward. Like, literally, you like broadcast announcers, you are doing ESPN, you're doing the research, and then you're making a claim or an argument, whereas they're just kind of like reacting to things they don't have all the information for, just like we are. And unfortunately, they end up looking bad because of it.
Right.
Well, you know, if they need someone that sounds good while being recorded, you know, I'm always available.
Wow. This guy. Morgan for coverage, everybody.
Yeah, why not?
Oh, what is that? Oh, it's crickets.
Oh.
No, it says must have.
I made you my Kenny, and I can easily get rid of you.
Whoa, what? Am I adopted?
New regular guy? Am I the third guy now?
Yeah, you got replacements lining up left and right.
Jesus.
I'm just kidding.
Alright.
So, do we want to go to the question of the week?
I think we probably should.
Oh man, I'm so excited. Dave, can you do us the honor of reading the question of the week?
Okay, sure. Question of the week. How can Modo, Cockatrice, etc. be a useful tool for players?
Well done. Just great.
Well done.
Yeah, so are these online resources good? Can they be good? How are they good?
Can we have like a very basic answer first? Like, you get to play more games with Cockatrice, you get to play a lot of games for free. So, good?
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously more to it than that, right? Like, Cockatrice isn't good for testing against good people, but it's good for seeing if a card's, like, just good at all, right?
Yes and no. Like, Modo, probably more realistically, Cockatrice, like, I mean, you get to play people who, like, play, like, turn one, like, I mean, I don't know, some terrible, like, M13 one drop, and you're just like, well, this is not a game.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you can play Cockatrice against your friends, though. You don't have to be playing against randos.
That's very true.
That's true. I mean, a Cockatrice is really fun, actually, when you're on Skype and don't have to click the phase buttons, you know, and you can just, you know, do that.
No, I mean, honestly, like, most people don't care too. Like, if you're really a stickler for the phase buttons, I mean, like, the ones I always get are the people who are like, how do you shuffle your deck? And I'm like, please leave. Like,
please go.
Right, and I don't think that makes you rude, right? Like, it's not, you're not there to teach people how to use Cockatrice, you're in there to test games. Because there's got to be a way to use these tools correctly, because you just can't jam games on Cockatrice. I don't know, like, maybe this question just sucks, but...
Well, like, Cockatrice is actually, so you can fishbowl really easily on Cockatrice. Like, you don't have to, like, actually, like, shuffle. Like, I know for Modern, when I played Storm right at the beginning, when Modern first came out, man, you could just fishbowl, like, just hands after hand after hand. And that's a good way just to see, you know, how the deck runs without an opponent. And that's something that you... Again, like, compare that time-wise to sitting at the dining room table and shuffling your deck.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely a lot easier.
Do you think Modo makes players better?
I mean, if you ask me, I would say absolutely that Modo makes players better. I mean, I'll just say this from personal experience. So I'll preface this by saying that I don't play Modo a whole lot. I like to play Live Magic, but Modo definitely helped me immensely with learning the little nuances of the game, like little triggers, because it kind of visualizes everything for you.
I mean, that's definitely true. The combat step is like slow, like you can draw it out to the point where it's like you know whenever you get a chance to respond to something, which is nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So as far as like from a rules perspective, like, you know, you can, if you're relatively new, you know, you kind of know the basic rules, but to really know all the little interactions or anything like that, Modo is awesome because it enforces all those things. So, I mean, that's great. And it's also good for playtesting limited formats, I think. I know that with our group, we tend to not play limited that much. I guess other than in Cube, but it doesn't really count. But on Modo, you can just go on and draft anytime.
That's true as well.
So yeah. I guess it really depends on what you want to get out of it.
And I guess like, more to that point, I mean, like as much as the beta has been, you know, the new beta has been hated on, like it does illustrate the stack, which I think is one of those things. Like when I was first playing, it's like, yeah, so there's this stack that spells go on, and I'm like, sure. Like, it's something really hard to grasp, but actually, like, the new beta, like, illustrates the stack really well. Like, they like, angle them so that you can see them actually stacked on top of each other and which way they're going to resolve. And you could, mm-hmm. like, it's, I mean, for a new player, that would definitely be really helpful to see.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I mean, like, it's just about playing games. Like, Modo is a tool. It is a tool to you know, play it's Magic. Correct. But it's a tool, as far as that's concerned, to get better. I mean, that's what people use it for, is to grind games of Magic, as far as that goes. So, but can it make people better? Of course. But I mean, you have to be able to use it right. You can't just be like, I'm just gonna grind infinite games on Modo, and I'll be fine. I'll be perfect. No matter what. I mean, you have to have some rule set, some designation as far as that's concerned about how this is going to get you better. Grinding games is grinding games, and that's fine. And if you're just constantly doing that without necessarily, you know, having a goal in mind, I don't know if that necessarily makes you better. And also something that you have to understand is that the metagame on Modo is going to be slightly different than what you see live.
Well, that's definitely true. I mean, whatever's cheapest is definitely going to be the most popular.
Exactly. So, like, you know, you'll look at Modo deck results, and you'll be like, oh, all these guys are, you know, this deck is just crushing online, but it's like, yeah, but that deck...
is a mono red in this daily.
Right. Why is someone else playing this? Like,
yeah, I just bought red-green aggro for, like, $45. Like, it's the best.
Exactly. So, like, you know, with that in mind, you know, you have to take Modo testing with a grain of salt. Will it make you physically... not physically. There's no physicality in Magic.
It's at the end of a long day, buddy.
Sure, yeah, certainly. Get a back brace, I don't know.
Lumbar support?
Guys, I'm too fat to play Magic, so I gotta get a back brace. What?
The machinations that are involved in playing Magic, will it make you better at that? I think it will. It obviously allows you to understand your phases better. Understanding your phases is huge compared to someone that's just starting, compared to someone that's played for a while. Because you understand when you can interact, and when you have those openings, and that's vastly important in playing this game. Because that's when you can gain advantage. If you're not good at just understanding cards and playstyle in general, Modo is not going to improve that for you. I don't think. It's just so hard. It's hard to teach that to someone, you know, without conversing and talking. And you can do that through Modo, but you need to have people that you know, as far as it's concerned. Most of the time, Modo chat is used for the most horrible things anyway, so, you know. I think if you have, like, people that you play with constantly, and they only play on Modo and you only play on Modo, like, of course, you know, providing that you guys are reasonable players anyway, you'll get better because you guys will be able to discuss choices. But it's just like playing in paper. I mean, you have to have people that are going to be good and that are, you're going to, it just kind of harkens back to our playtest group. You know, it's nothing by itself, I think, can necessarily make you like the best at Magic.
Yeah. I would say, no, it's not going to make you good, but it's a great way to refine your game. guess.
Exactly. Yeah. Like the like I said, the machinations of the actual game. 100%. 100%. I know that when I started playing Modo, like having everything, having all the phases broke down on the side, and like knowing when you had, you know, chances to respond, like, was huge. And like, it's gotten me out of, you know, so many things in playing in paper Magic, when, you know, people thought that's not necessarily as clearly defined as it might, as it needs to be. But man, you play Magic online and it breaks it down for you step by step. It's amazing. And I think that that's vastly important.
I think you touched on something, the other part of this, though. When you said, like, doesn't Modo make a better player? Like, Dave, you're right, it does make a player technically better, but I think the Xbox Live aspect of it, where it's just, like, if you win, like, you're a Luxac, and you are gonna get called the greatest learn words. I mean, you're gonna learn words. That's what's gonna happen. And the same thing, like, what's really frustrating on, like, if you ever play Cockatrice, which I guess we should preface, like, we were talking about this, you know, this is a program that you can play Magic on. Essentially, it's essentially just an emulator for Magic. Okay, because some people, like you say that, and they're like, "Oh, a bird."
the mythical bird.
Yeah, it's a card, right? Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of times, like, there's players in Tonkatrice who are, you know, like, I've had this happen multiple times where you're testing, like, a control list to counter a spell, and they yell at you, just like newer players get mad about this. Like, you counter spells? That's ridiculous! You're an asshole. This, that, and they just leave. Like, and there's no prize associated with it, so you've just lost X amount of time on it. Whereas in Modo, if they want to leave, then you just win, so there's that. But it's frustrating, like, you have to have a lot of patience, yeah. Unless you enjoy, you know, treating other humans like trash, in which case, Modo is for you.
Yeah, clearly. Yeah, if you're just, if you like treating people like human refuse, oh man, do I have a place you can go. And it's not to hell, like most people tell you.
It's a certain level of hell, right?
Like, I mean, maybe.
You seen this client? Oh my gosh.
Oh man, don't. I mean, we should definitely get some more Modo games in and actually play with the beta and talk about that. I think that is a huge hot button issue right now in our community. But I think we should definitely save that for another time, because we are getting a bit long in the tooth here. Definitely didn't get everything on our show notes, but we'll leave them to other podcasts as far as that's concerned, because there's going to be many more. Who cares if anyone's listening? No one. the last thing that we wanted to touch on
is... They brought them all in.
Yes, come on. And then they'll be sad because it's us. But the last thing that we just, you know, like we usually do, like to talk over what we're going to be doing, and hopefully everyone on this podcast right now will be going to a PTQ in the Kentucky area this weekend. I know that Jordan, Mike, and Dave certainly are. I'm still undecided, as I usually am, because, you know, I got to talk to people about things. And hopefully everyone...
Descriptive.
Listen, I live a very secretive life, you know, and
well,
don't like
to your house. I know what you're doing.
Easy, Bruce. I don't have to...
Anyway, it's not set in stone for me, but it's definitely set in stone for the other guys as far as that's concerned. So they'll be down there. Hopefully I will be as well. And we'll be, you know, grinding some games, trying to get some wins, and, you know, playing some Magic. So if you are for some reason listening to this and you're in the Kentucky area and we'll be at the PTQ, be sure to say hi to the guys and hi to me if I'm there as well.
They don't know what we look like, just so you know.
Well, I mean, they can be like, oh, well, maybe I should try and find them.
We can tweet
maybe
a picture on Friday. Let's do that.
Maybe they should scream our names in the event hall and see if we say hi.
Oh, that...
I'm True Man, Morg War Marshal, and Big Tears.
they'll hear me. Don't worry, they'll hear me.
Yeah, clearly. I mean, I think it's fine. Yeah, if you go there and, you know, the PTQ is about to start, around the time they would make important announcements, just yell at our names, please, please.
If the head judge is trying to talk, just haul.
Oh, yeah, especially if he's trying to talk, please yell over him. 100%. Especially if he shushes you, even
what was
better.
That I thought, do you have something to say, Dave?
Oh, I just said the judges love that.
Oh, they do. They do. One thing before we go, I have to remember. We got a sweet emblem now. And so I promised in lieu of money, because, you know, we don't have any and he didn't want any, a friend of mine by the name of Steve Govern, who's a designer for hire, did our lovely emblem. So if you follow us on Twitter and see that great graphic, you'd be like, oh man, this guy, you should go and make him make things for you.
it's actually really awesome. It's nice to have a logo and not just a picture of an egg. So I'm definitely really like that. And I hope you're seeing it
kind of attached
to the egg. It's all right. A lot of us still love our mothers.
As a testament to our Modo conversation, this just happened. I fired up an 8-man queue on Modo and I'm playing Red Green Aggro. I played turn 1 Stromkirk Noble. My opponent snap conceded. Like, I'm not lying. I have 24 minutes and 45 seconds on my clock.
That's amazing. Congrats.
Yeah, no, going to game 2 here. So that's Modo, folks.
So I guess he just can't win game 1 and just is like, got a sideboard.
6, but that's not even like, what? Like,
that's not even reasonable. Well, yeah. Awesome. Well, clearly he knew it was you and you're just the biggest luck sack ever, so it doesn't even matter.
Well, then he goes turn... So he's playing 9 humans. I don't understand.
Anyway.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this, of course, has been another episode of At Your End Stuff. And we always appreciate you guys listening and downloading. And we'll catch you next week.